Hello, everyone. This is Fred Ferrara, original member from the Brooklyn Bridge Handel Satins. And you're listening to our good friend, very good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Stan Ziska, original lead singer of the Del Satins. And you're listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Les Gauci, originally of the Del Satins and of Johnny Maestro and the Brooklyn Bridge. And right now, you're listening to a dear friend of mine over the years, and hopefully in the future, which we're going to make it a point of, Mr. Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. So keep on enjoying that good old doo-wop and rock and roll. Bye.
Hi, this is Mike Miller from the Harmony Street Show, and I have my good friend, longtime friend, Les Gauci from the Satins and the Brooklyn Bridge, and
Mr. Miller.
How you doing, Mr. Gauci?
I'm hanging in there.
I know, man.
Hanging in there, my friend.
I know. You know, Les, it's just so traumatic, and it seems like just still another a member of your musical family has been taken, and it's got to be tough because I saw you recently, and here we were talking about John, and Freddie was standing right there, and of course Freddie Ferrara is now gone. There are just no words that can express what a loss that is, not only to you and your musical family, but to the entire genre of music that we love.
Oh, yes, Mike, it's been a very sad time.
I know.
And very unexpectedly that he passed away the way he did. You know, we're working out a future for the Del Satins and the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
And Freddie was an important part of it. And the problems that he had were affecting his singing ability.
Right.
So with his okay blessing and his working out the situation with me months ago, we decided to bring into the Brooklyn Bridge Joe Rubio,
right,
original performer and singer and member of the original Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
So we were like, practicing with him to cover Freddie's parts if necessary. So we were going to have both of them on stage.
I see, because I know, you know, even the shows that we worked together, you know, Fred was sitting down, you know, at some points during the show because he didn't have the stamina, you know, to do the whole show standing up.
Exactly. And with the Del Satins, the same thing. We were rehearsing and he loved it. We all loved it. But
right.
He really loved getting back with the original guys, doing the songs that we learned.
Oh, of course.
Many years ago and doing the flamingo tunes and the harp tone tunes that we'd love to do. And
right.
He really put his heart into that. And on that particular time, I should say, for that particular situation, we had Charlie Aiello, who
right.
was a member of the Del Satins and Tangerine with Stanley all these years, was
right.
able to cover Freddie's parts that he couldn't do.
Right.
And definitely, this is the way we're going to go. I didn't, if it got to the point where Freddie didn't even sing one note.
Right.
I wanted him right next to me, but it was still in that, you know, just to be on that stage
well,
with us.
How do you do without a guy that's been next to you? I mean, I'm sure, you know, at what age did you and Freddie start singing together?
You know, geez, you know, we knew each other even to a point that we played sports together before we even sang one note together.
Wow.
You know, I've always been singing, more so than Freddie had.
Right.
We just knew him from the neighborhood, New York and the East Side, you know. He lived on 69th Street.
Right.
Between 1st and 2nd.
Right.
And I lived on 70th Street between 1st and 2nd.
Unbelievable.
So we used to hang out in the summer, you know, play stickball, play baseball. We belonged to the same club called the Jokers at Lenox Soda Settlement House.
Right.
On my street, 70th Street. And the singing thing, I think probably Stanley must have told you the story about how Freddie became a vocalist in the group.
Well, yeah, we went over that, but just, you know, let's hit on it now just for a minute.
Well, oh, the fact that Freddie
was
the Del Santin?
Yes.
Right, we used to practice at Mom and Dad Ferrara's house all the time, even out in Staten Island,
you know,
grandparents. And this is when Stanley basically got into the group. We went downstairs in the basement, and we were, like, you know, chiming, like we all did.
Of course.
And, you know, I think the first song we did was Castle in the Sky.
Right.
And really, if you know what I'm talking about. And the most important tunes we did learn at that time was Sweetest One and Juanita.
Right.
Johnny Maestro compositions,
right.
And he recorded them. Who would think?
Right.
Years and years from there that we would be part of Johnny Maestro's story.
Absolutely. I mean, you couldn't make that stuff up.
Right, so Freddie was actually stoking the furnace, you know, because his father was the superintendent.
Right.
And we were missing a note. And I don't know, it was Tommy, his family, myself, you know.
Right.
And Freddie's right there, and we said, Fred, hit this note, you know.
Come here.
Stain it, see what happens.
Right.
And it just hit like a ooh.
Right.
And magic. We loved the tone. And that's how we actually solidified the whole Del Satin group at that time.
That's unbelievable.
Beautiful story. And since that day, with the interruption, of course, of Vietnam,
right.
I've been singing along with Freddie until last week. I took Freddie around, of course, which is my pleasure, my goomba all these years.
Right.
And I drop him off that Wednesday. You know, we talk sports, we talk about music,
right.
And what we had to do. That night at 10 o'clock, I took him home saying, Fred, I will talk to you tomorrow, see what's going on, bup, bup, bup. And that was the last time. Three hours later, he had the unfortunate incident and created a heart attack for him.
Unbelievable. Well, you know, I know you guys, for so many years, even way back when Clay Cole had the world and Johnny was singing with the band The Crest and they were up there singing Your Love Is Like a Heartburn. I was doing shows with an a cappella group that I had called The Islanders. And the Satins were always around. And as a matter of fact, I think Clay Cole played a big part in everybody's life. At that point, because you guys were very hooked up with Clay.
Oh, yes. You know, Clay was very, very important part of our careers.
Hi, this is Clay Cole. You're on the Harmony Street Show with my good friend, Mike Miller.
We did, I don't know, it was a couple of years. Stanley, we probably have the exact times, but we did a show every week. It was like a hit parade show.
Right.
We actually mimicked the artist, and we get skits.
Right, right, right.
And then the show popularity got big that he even had a second show, a Sunday sort of variety show where we would sit around on a couple of couches and talk to stars, that were promoting their movies. That was another facet with Clay, and we did all these videos at the time, and talking about Clay.
Very innovative.
Innovative. Right. And we were just with him a month at the special music seminar thing at the Meadowlands, you know, with all these different artists. You know, it was a three-day event where we met the fans and we signed autographs and had paraphernalia and everything like that. He was promoting his book. And there we were reminiscing, and my God, I think it was a month and a half later, Clay leaves us.
Well, you know, what's really funny is that his brother Rich called me. And Rick Rucker, and he said to me, you know, I know you were close to Clay, and I know, you know, you did the last big interview with him. He said, you know, that he was actually, when he got up from the table and went into the hallway and passed away, I went to the desk. He was actually in the middle of writing a Christmas card to you and Paulette. He says, I kid you not.
That's
I said, oh, my
crazy.
God.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, I mean, because...
And writing a card for you at the time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and really and truly, just to pull back a little bit, so many of the people that we love, because we're at this stage in our lives, you know, you get a phone call and you say, oh my goodness, it's this person or that person. And the music becomes more important than ever now, because you want to keep their memory alive. You want to keep the music alive. And I know, Les, that until the day you stop doing this, you're going to feel Freddie next to you at every show. I mean, it's like, how do you look to the side of you and not see Freddie there? He's always been there.
Oh, definitely. His spirit is with me, as strong as ever, as is John. John is with us, you know, 42 years, and Freddie and I,
right.
You, John, going back 50 years.
Right.
And, my God, you know, they're definitely part of us now, you know? They're definitely part of who we are. And I got to get a little rundown on Fred, because it's very important to me personally. When I got drafted, you know, and I had to go to Vietnam and do my time,
right.
Tommy went, his brother, who later became one of the members of Caprice, right, as you know.
Right, of course.
He went to Vietnam about 7 or 8 months after I did. But anyway, when I was there, Freddie would correspond with me. You know, he's the only one that, you know, kept me going,
right.
You know, as far as what's going on with the music. And the thing he told me that they tagged Johnny Maestro to be a member of the Del Satins.
Right.
Johnny Maestro to become a Del Satin. It was unreal. So, and then when I came back from Vietnam, the airport, it was Freddie and my wife there to greet me.
Uh-huh.
So, and 2 days later, I didn't know what I was going to be doing. And he said, listen, the Del Satins are going to evolve into a bigger group. We don't even really have a name yet, but you're tapped for it. And he, you know, it gave me the opportunity to become back into what I really wanted to do all my life, and that's to sing, perform, etc.
Right.
He opened the door for me there. And then Freddie became a member of my wedding party.
Uh-huh.
You know, after traveling 8 hours from the top of the state of Vermont all morning just to get to my wedding. So
oh,
he hung in there with me there. And it goes on and on and on with Freddie and myself, you know, so he's very much a part of my life.
Well, you know, Freddie was such a sweet sweet person. I mean, soft-spoken and sweet, and he just must have been a pleasure to work with. I mean, you know, I've been in your presence so many times, even going back to, you know, the 60s, the 70s. I remember a time when, you know, you guys were at the Raleigh Hotel, and I walked into the lounge because my a cappella group was singing there at the same time, and it was the Brooklyn Bridge, and there were about four people in the room, and the Brooklyn Bridge is singing Full Tilt and whatever, and I went over to John at that time, and I said, John, why are you guys running Full Tilt? There's only four people there, and two of them are talking to each other and not even paying attention. And he said, I don't care if there's one person there. We give them the whole show, start to finish, and we give them the best, because you never know who's walking in here.
Absolutely. That carried over, Mike, to what we were all about, and that's what forged us on to continue.
Right.
Success that we did have over the years. It's funny about thinking back about John. He coined us, Freddie and myself.
Right.
And he called us ooh and ah.
Because of the U's and the ah's, of course.
The U's and the ah's, you know, and it was so funny that, you
That's
know,
very funny.
That name stuck with us, of course, more so than the members of the band. And,
right.
Ooh and ah. So, you know, it was a thing that how we were connected, you know, musically and from a friendly point of view. You know, when we live one block away from each other in the city, right?
Right.
So I move out to Long Island to a town called Holtsville.
Right.
So maybe a year later, Freddie comes out to Long Island and he moves to the town called Holbrook.
Now, Holtsville is
equivalent to 69th Street, and Holtsville is equivalent to 70th Street if you go from one town to the other.
I got you.
So I think in the stars that him and I were meant to go this far, and believe me, I'm mad to a point that he passed. So abruptly, you know.
Well, especially now that, there was so much emotion and energy just trying to everybody keeping their balance after John and finding some direction, because you and I talk about it all the time as far as, you know, where the arrow is headed, you know, as far as all of the guys keeping it all alive. And then to have one of the legs of the table kicked out from under you again is very hard. It's a question of just coming back and coming back. I know how hard it is.
Yeah, two areas now, you know, because the Brooklyn Bridge, of course, after all these years, and the restart of the Del Santins. But, Mike, as we talked, you know, our responsibility is to continue the legacy of both acts.
Right.
You know, and from my point of view, as a member of the two acts, I intend to do whatever I can to keep that music going and keeping it alive for John, Freddie, and Tommy, you know, from the Capris now,
right,
is with the Del Santins.
Right.
You know, we lost Nick Santa Maria.
Right, of course, yeah.
You know, all these people that are so close to us over the years in the musical world also, in our musical world, they all meant something to us, you know?
It's funny, too, you know, when you talk about that stuff and you know, you have all these people and these wonderful friends that I've managed to become friendly with over the years, just being a small grain of sand on the beach myself, you know. And it was funny, I was backstage at a show, Jimmy Beaumont and Carl Springs says, hey, Mike, why don't you come over and hang out with us backstage and whatever. And they were having a trivia contest at the show, which was very funny. And the question was, when was Morse Code of Love written? Not when it was produced and recorded. And so, you know, I'm backstage and whatever, and they're all fighting over it in the audience. And Becca, I says, never mind, I'm going to call Frankie Reyna now. I called him up. He says, hey, we just finished dinner. What do you want to know? So, you know, I called him and he says, oh, you know, tell everybody it was actually 1982 and it was recorded the next year. Most people think that it was written in 67. But, you know, you think to yourself that all these guys, these wonderful people in this business, they just are behind each other and they care about each other. And when you go backstage in a show, everybody's rooting for everybody else. People that are not part of that, they don't understand what a tremendous fraternity of people it is.
Oh yes,
you know,
Freddie and I were golf partners, and we played against Nick Santamaria and Mike Dano many. We had great outings together. That's how tight we were in that area of our lives. You know, besides the singing. And what can I tell you?
I want to ask you a question or two that you probably never get asked, you know, and that's, everybody remembers the Del Satins, and they remember what great dancers you guys were and what great routines you had. And, I got to say, you were the best white dancing group that there was out there. I mean, you know, for real.
We worked hard. We did.
I know. Who was the best dancer in the Del Satins?
Oh, my goodness. Now, are you going to put me against the wall on that one? It has to be, we all had a different...
I know that.
we all had a different way of approaching things. But from doing the splits and the jumping up in the air and whatever...
Feet flying, right.
Good show. It was a cooperative effort. And I tell you, there were times we got off that stage, Mike, and we worked so hard that we... throw up in the...
Oh, yeah, I can imagine. I mean, you know, it was like...
When I think back, and my God, the effort that we put into it, you know.
I never could believe how you could sing and be that tight and also move that much, you know.
Yeah, we were younger, too.
I understand. What were some of Freddie's hobbies for people that really didn't know Freddie as a person?
Recently, he loved to do photography work and artwork on the computer.
Right.
And as a matter of fact, in the album, last album that we did record, which Johnny produced, and along with Tom Sullivan, who did tremendous arrangements on the album Peace on Earth.
Right.
The original cover was the artwork of Freddie.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that, because if you remember when that came out, you sent me a copy, I think, before it even came out.
Right.
You had sent me a copy, right.
Of course, then Collectibles picked it up and named it the Songs of Inspiration with a picture of the group.
Right.
Which was, I submitted to them. It was a nice presentation of the band the way it is.
Yeah, I still have the original artwork, sure.
It's out there, you know. Of course, he loved to go bowling until he couldn't.
Oh, wow.
Couldn't do it. He was a great bowler. And also loved golf, which I participated with him, and great sports fan. You know, he was a Yankee and Giant fan.
Oh, yeah. Weren't we all? I mean, you know, and Yankee fans. I mean, as a matter of fact, I'll tell you a story. When Harmony Street sang the national anthem at Shea Stadium, which is a long story in itself, because you know how the girls were. We got offered to sing the national anthem in a 25-minute show at Shea Stadium, and then we get a call from the Mets just before Mother's Day, and they say, you know, so-and-so is in town. I don't remember who. You can't sing the anthem, but you can sing the show. And so Ellen, Robin, and Dee hook arms together and say, you please call him back and tell him we're not coming unless we can sing the anthem. Oh. So I call up Vito Vitiello, who's the head of public relations at that time. I says, they said they're not coming. And instead of telling me to, you know, to go away, he says, look, I'll make it up to you, and I'll try to get you another date. I understand. So he calls us up during the playoffs, and he says, or just before the playoffs, and he says, not only do you have the anthem during the playoffs, but you have the 25-minute show. So we speak to John, and I call John, and I said, John, tell me the secret to singing the national anthem at a ballpark. And he says to me, do not listen to the speakers behind you. You must really plug into that lifetime monitor in front of you, or you're going to get lost, and it's going to be a train wreck. And if he didn't tell us that, we would have been dead in the water with a 25-minute show, because, you know, the repeat at the ballpark is like a second and a half later, which is why so many people, you know, I mean, you know how that is. But it was John that saved our lives. I mean, you know.
I know, because John experienced it when we did it at ballparks. And I think the most difficult one was, at the time, Giant Stadium, because of the size.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
We did it for the Giant football game. We did it at basketball games, and like the Liberty and the Nets at the time.
Right.
And the thing with Freddie and sports, I just have to throw this in there, because we were opposites we loved the sports, but we were opposite fans. We were very cooperative with each other because he was a Yankee Giant fan.
Right.
And I was a Met Jet fan. Ends of the spectrum. But, you know, because of our relationship over the years,
right,
we were very cooperative on our opposite sense when it came to being a fan.
That's how families are.
We find that out.
And, you know, just like any family, families breathe. I mean, you know, you have good days, you have bad days. But basically, when the Bridge were up on stage, an awful lot of love on stage because, you know, regardless of what was going on in the dressing room, having done so many shows during the prime years, I mean, you guys were working so much. And, if I may say so, that's the time when you were doing two completely different shows a night. So, I mean, it was just, you know, more of the same, more of the same, more of the same. So when you live with people on a day and night basis all of that time, I mean, they become part of you.
Oh, every minute of your life just about, you know.
I remember Johnny saying to me, "Now we don't rehearse anymore. We don't have to. We sing them. We rehearse on stage."
Sure, because you know what it is? Each venue has its own little particularities.
Right.
A sound or equipment situations. And you get up there, and you really have to adjust accordingly to your stage environment.
Right.
You know, eventually we got the inner-ear monitors, which helped us tremendously.
Right, I remember the day. I remember John coming out on stage, and at the beginning of the cordless mics, for the first 6 months, he would forget to turn the switch on the bottom of the mic on, and he would come out sing the first verse. You'd have to lip-read.
Oh, he hated that. It was terrible. When he come up there, he's singing, nothing's coming out, and we look at him like...
And then he turned then that switch on that mic was on the bottom, if I remember correctly.
Right. We had some funny situations. But, you know, like the in-ears are very good for vocalists because, you know, you're singing against the live clashing sound of a cymbal or a guitar note.
Right.
It goes right through your brain, you know. It eliminates all that problem so we can actually sing with each other.
Hmm.
And we got to that level, and it was really paying off because it was coming across really, really good.
Yeah, well, you know, nobody had better harmony, you know, than the Bridge at their peak and everything. And, you know, let's say a few words about Smitty, because Smitty is such an unsung hero that not a lot of people who know the Bridge understand that Ed Smith has been like, you know, a brain sitting behind and with the Bridge, working the board and putting the sound together for all those years. And he's really a hero.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've always been the administration, the management office for the Bridge. And I remember when I first met him, he comes out with a suit and tie.
I remember when he was a kid.
Yeah, as a kid, you know, just wondering what kind of world this is. And going back to 1984 or 5, he goes back.
Mm-hmm.
I had it because I was working in the Jericho area at the time.
Right.
He was like wide-eyed, you know. Look at how many years he's been with us now, you know?
Right.
And he's going on his own to a certain extent now, which I really encourage him and very proud of him because he's been on tour with Gloria Gaynor. He's done a lot of the major venues in the Long Island parks and New Jersey parks.
Right.
He's been going out of town, and that's why he was in Toronto this past weekend when he had all that problem because of the snowstorm. He couldn't actually get to the first gig in time. Mm-hmm. But he's really spreading his wings a little bit, and I'm very proud of Ed Smith, very proud of him.
Me too also. Whether you know this or not, I mean, a couple of the times that we worked together, you know, Ellen's husband, Mitch, would run video. And I have some Bridge video that nobody's seen, that as I looked through my archives of Super 8 film, a lot of stuff that hasn't been seen before. And then there was also a show, I don't know if you remember, it goes back many, many years, but there was a show in New Paltz. And you guys were there a little late, and as a matter of fact, the MCs were Rick McCaffrey and Gary Lee Schwartz of the Solid Gold Jukebox. And
by Gary Lee Schwartz a couple of days ago.
And Gary talked everybody into recording off the board. And there is a CD of that because, you know, Johnny never liked to record off the board, you know.
Sure.
It was like, you know, we want to be in control of what's going out there. I have that CD too. But I'll tell you a quick Gary Lee story. You guys, you know, Gary, Johnny didn't like to do too many interviews. you know how John was. So, you know, I'm talking to Johnny. I says, does Gary Lee wants to interview you? He's going, ah. So Gary Lee walks over live on the air and says to John, as John is eating, everybody was in the dining room. You were sitting right there. I don't know if you remember. He says, we have here Johnny Maestro, you know, the legend Johnny Maestro. He says, John, tell your listening audience, who do you think is uglier, Tony Bennett or Alice Cooper? And John turns around and looks at him, pushes the mic away and says, get him out of here, whatever.
Really?
And no, this is a true story. And what? Gary Lee says on the air, ladies and gentlemen, Johnny Maestro has just been taken away for an emergency charisma bypass.
Oh my!
And that went out, and that went out over the radio. And I don't know if you ever knew that story.
But I didn't know that, but I tell you, over the years,
Gary Zaney, you know.
Oh, Gary has come from many of our shows, especially the Elmsford, the Broadway Theater.
Oh yeah.
And his wife, who passed away.
I know.
And she used to come up with a rose all the time.
Right.
Her favorite song was "Welcome Me, Love."
Oh, you're talking about Hersha.
Yes.
Hersha was not his wife, you know.
She went, excuse me?
Hersha was not his wife.
Oh, okay. Well,
live and you learn. I loved her. Hersha was a fabulous person.
I knew her well. At the end there, tremendously. But
right.
We're such a big fan, and we got to be very, very good friends with Gary. He just called me and made an interview with David Hinckley.
Oh, wow.
Concerning Freddie just last week.
Right.
And David Hinckley put a piece in the Daily News about Freddie's passing.
That's wonderful. Well, you know, Gary's very plugged in. I mean, and Gary's been around for so long.
He gives me all these special publications that he's involved with.
Right.
Up there. And We did some good interviews up there. We had some great pizza up there, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But we did follow up accordingly with Gary and, what's the other fellow's name again?
Rick McCaffrey.
Yes, Rick McCaffrey.
Yeah, the Solid Gold Jukebox. That was a fabulous show, you know. It's not on anymore. You know how these radio stations change their format, you know.
We're doing interviews with you, and Don K. Reed has something with Warren.
Right.
Belmont. We did an interview up there with him.
I think it's great that Don is back doing something. I mean, I talk to him once a week, of course, and, you know, what a great, great guy he is, you know, and I've known him most of my adult life, too. He, you know, I'm just glad that Warren and the Belmonts were able to talk him into doing some more radio, because I tried to talk to him, and he says, I'm not doing internet. It's, you know, I'm a purist, but
he's very stubborn about that.
Yeah, I know.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Mike Miller, my good friend, on the Harmony Street Show. Oh, by the way, this is Don K. Reed. Remember from the Doo-Wop Shop?
But it's an outlet now, and it's a major outlet now.
Oh, you bet!
Because you know the radio, what it is today. You know, it's not a means for communicating what people are all about.
Well, it's going to take over. I've been very lucky, and I do it, you know, out of love. You know, when I stopped singing out, I just says, you know, let me do this and talk to all the people that I've spent so much time on stage with.
The outreach you have with all these people.
Oh, yeah,
cooperating, and you're having all this great interviews and playing our music, keeping the music alive.
It's been very successful. And do you know that my very first interview 3.5 years ago was Stan Zyska?
Yes. What a small world. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I called Stan. I says, hey, Stan, you know, and he says, oh, man, of course, you know, and then from there, you know, and now, of course, God willing, I have Johnny Mathis coming up in December, and
Don't worry about Johnny Mathis. His manager, Helen Noyes,
right,
actually interviewed us, and we auditioned for her.
Uh-huh.
You know that? It was an amazing thing. We worked with Phil Spector.
Right.
A whole bunch, you know. The story of the Del Sands is being on the corner of 68th Street in New York City on 2nd Avenue with doo-wop, and actually underneath one of these lamps, light poles. You
right.
know what I'm talking about? It's like what you see in the movie.
Right.
It's true. And this person comes over to us, crosses the street, and hands us a card, and it says, you guys sound really, really good.
follow up on this card. Call up this particular person and see what happens.
Right.
That was the beginning of our professional, real professional life.
Just like the story says, you know, that's written on the wind, you know, it's
right.
Like standing on the corner.
I grew on that. And that person was Wally, the bass singer of the Heartbeats.
Wow.
We emulated. We loved the Heartbeats. Thousand miles away, and the songs were endless with the Heartbeats.
Right.
You know? And that's who found and discovered the Del Santos.
I don't know if I ever knew that, no.
No, from a serious point of view. Of course, we had the little local, always a guy ambitious to be a little manager, and we did the local little community house and
right.
Things like that. But from him, we went to the professionals. And from there, Helen was one of them, Johnny Matheson.
Right, I know who that is, yeah.
Yes, and of course, we weren't her type of artist, but she did lead us on to somebody else.
Wow.
To somebody else. And history goes, no, from them to Phil Spector, who wanted us to sing like the Four Seasons.
Right.
And Stanley and the group were not in favor of that.
Right.
We had the opportunity then from Jim Gribble, who managed everybody.
You bet.
Chance the Yaw, Larry Chance. And the Earls.
And the Mystics and the Passions and the...
On and on and
right.
on. And when we auditioned for Dion, he didn't even bother listening to anybody else. We did maybe... Stanley probably remembered the song we did. And Bingo, You Guys Are High. And we
wow.
were with him for 2 years.
And everybody knows how particular Dion is.
Oh, he didn't. But I tell you, Mike, what a experience. What a great experience.
Oh, of course.
And my God.
One of the most talented people. You know,
super creative.
He lives... You know, right down the block from me, he texts me on the phone all the time. And or he'll call me and he'll say, yo, I'm in New York. You know, it's like the other day he calls me, he says, I'm in New York.
New York, again.
And he says, I can't get around. All the protesters are here, whatever.
Mike, this is Dan. Thanks for thinking of me. Stay well. God bless.
He actually called me to find out if it was true about Freddie, and I said, yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
And he, you know, don't ask me why he called me. He figured that that I know because we text each other all the time. And he says to me, because I'm going to put it on my Facebook and I don't want to be wrong. He said, so I says, no, I already spoke to Les and I already spoke to Stan. And he said, okay, then, you know, I'm going to do it.
A little story about Dion. And,
yeah.
And this one stuck. This one stuck. Dion, just for fun,
right.
Reversed our names. Like Stan would be Nats,
uh-huh.
Les would be Cell,
uh-huh.
Tom would be Mott, and Freddie would be Durf. Now, Durf, it stayed with him until today, that name. people in our business who picked up on it, to this day, nobody calls me Cell or Tommy Nats, Stan and Nats. But Durf stayed with Freddie.
Wow.
And it was Dion who did that. He coined them and stayed with them. A little trivia there. It's just like in a family kind.
Well, Dion is, you know, he's very avant-garde. You never know what you're going to get out of him or whatever. Whatever.
That album he made, the guitar, when he did all that guitar work.
Oh, it's amazing. You know, he calls me up. He calls me. This is a funny story. He calls me. I'm with Paulette's father. Who is, you know, in his late 80s, and we're getting his brakes fixed on his Buick. And Dion calls me, and he goes, yo, Mike, I'm in the Holland Tunnel, he says, and I'm coming back, you know, whatever. He says, and I'm riding, he says, and when I get back to Boca, he says, we're going to do an interview. Because I already said, he says, you know, it's time for us to do an interview. So I says, okay. And he calls me when he gets back, and I see he picks Tuesday night, and then... He texts me that Tuesday morning and he says, oh, so much stuff is going on, I can't do it. So a couple of weeks go by, I figure I give him some breathing room and I text him and I say, all right, you know, it's at your leisure, but, you know, when are you going to do the show? I'd love you to come on and spend some time with me and be on the show. It would really be the icing on the cake because, you know, I'd be thrilled. And he writes me back and he says, I really wish I could. But, you know, I have so many media commitments that I have to do. And so, you know, it's like, you know, I'm doing a lot of television and I'm doing a lot of other, I'm doing a lot of radio interviews. So I write him back. I said, my show's not a radio show.
Yeah.
And he writes back, you know, he writes back to me, chuckle. He spelled out chuckle. You know, that's Dion.
Dion, yeah. You know, I had the privilege of actually doing a duet with him. And there was a song, you got me running.
Right.
You got me hiding. You got me run, hide anywhere you want me to go. Remember that song?
Yeah, I just sure do.
Yeah, well, I did a duet with him, and he dug it, you know. He dug it. Out of all the voices, he picked mine.
Right.
But Dion had some really tough people behind him, and his manager was very protective of
right.
him. Very protective.
I know.
And matter of fact, we had battles with him as far as when it came to money. Not Dion per se, but his manager. And
right.
We did win out because Dion pushed because he liked what was happening between
right.
us, between the two of us.
Right.
So he wanted to put that in the album, but the record company said, no, you're a solo artist. Somebody sings with you, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, but at someplace in the archives, maybe somebody's got that tape, but...
1, 2, 3. Got me running, got me hiding, got me run, hide, run anywhere you want me to go. Yeah. Got me doing what you want me, baby. I'm going up, going down, going up, down, down, up, anywhere you want me to go. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Got me doing what you want me, baby, what you want me to do. Make up your mind. Yeah, whoa, 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 whoa.
Why didn't you do that the first time? Okay, very good.
There I am with him, and it was such an honor. And also with Johnny, I had the honor of doing one of the songs, a duet with him. It was the Cream song, Ice
right.
Free. I Feel Free.
Right.
Yeah, so if you listen to that song, that's Johnny and I doing the harmonies, I mean, the vocal leads together.
Well,
so I really am very privileged to be able to sing with.
Well, you and Freddie, I mean, when you think back and think of the people that you recorded with and the tunes that you are responsible for and the tunes that people hear you on, it is just, I mean, what a career.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. I mean, it's like, thank you, God. I mean, you know.
I look back at the catalog of stuff when we actually started with the Del Satins.
Right.
All those songs that we did, all the background things, because that's what put us in a position where we eventually ended up in, you know, being regular studio guys.
Right.
We were studio vocalists. We did a lot of background work. We were always in the studio more than we did live shows, even though we were known for the live show.
Which, by the way, is just as much fun.
Oh, yeah. We loved the studio. Of course, Johnny became the super guy in the studio, you know?
Right.
And then, just the last few days, we were listening to all the stuff in the Brooklyn Bridge did, you know, going to the gigs up to Connecticut.
Right.
I mean, the list of material and the versatility of songs and genres of different types of music that...
Well, you know, you get to the point...
I was surprised, you know? You forget about it, you know what I mean, Mike?
But you also get to the point that when you're seasoned... I'll give you an example. Do you remember on the cruise a couple of months ago when I don't know whose drummer was stuck in the room and Cheryl said, oh, my God, you know, the group's not ready to start the show and whatever. And I grabbed the mic and I said, all right, come here, come here, come here, come on, come on. So you came up, I mean, and Leslie Anderson came up and I think Rizika came up and whatever. And I just started calling them out, you know, and I said, okay, let's do this one, let's do that one. And it was BJ was singing bass, and it was almost as if we didn't even look at each other. I mean, we just did a couple of tunes in a row, bang, 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 because it was almost by telepathy. And you say to yourself, when you get to that point in the business, you know, and you become part of a... You know, you got that dream team head. It's just there. It's not like you got to even look at each other to hit that harmony because everybody knows where they are already.
That's good, Mike. That's so true. It becomes instinctive as to hear the changes, do them, and get the sound, even try to emulate the sound that the original song sounds like. And we did that. Hey, incidentally,
yeah,
I think we got ripped off.
Oh, go ahead.
Our vocal group, you know, in the contest.
Oh, yeah.
Battle of the groups. Come on. I think we got close to us. That was a fit.
It's true. But, you know, Cheryl got me afterwards. No, because Cheryl said to me it was supposed to be an amateur contest. And she said to me
that
I was a ringer. So I, so really wasn't fair. So I had to give it to somebody. That,
all right,
you know,
I'll take it. I'll go with that.
All right, you're right. But you know, our group definitely won. Definitely won.
Well, we had, you know, I mean, you know, look at that bunch of ringers over there. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And whatever, you know.
No.
It was fun. No, listen, I'm not griping. I think we had a good time and it was fun. You know, it was really a lot of fun. You know, we missed going on the next one, but. The coincidences of the situation that arose over the time, you know.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the future and the fact that now more than ever the ball has to keep rolling. And I know because I've had a few conversations with you and the powers that be, and I know that it's going to continue. And I know how much everybody wants it to continue for John's sake, for Freddie's sake, and for the sake of the music and for the sake of your fans. I mean, you know, when you guys announced, and I told you, you know, like a year ago, the Satins have to get back out there. And, you know, people get very excited when they hear that the original Satins are back together and will be even as accepting or more accepting at this point to see all of the Satins out there and singing. You know, Stan's chops are as good as ever, and I think it's all good.
Yeah, it's, you know, we have an album that was recorded many, many years ago. No, I forgot how many years ago, and Johnny produced it along with Stan.
Right.
Charlie. And we have some, I mean, the whole album, it's not only some, but the tunes are very, very exciting. And we have an actual vehicle for the Dulcetons to actually have a show.
Right.
We have those tunes that we could present there as a show, ensemble of tunes there, and plus whatever else we do. So we do have something to present to the people, which is fresh and new for the Dulcetons.
And in my mind, I mean, you know, you can do the Dion tunes because they're yours. Oh, they're yours as well. You can do the Johnny tunes because they're yours as well.
Right.
You know, and of course, the Satin tunes. And you can also come up with some new stuff, too, and say, look, we're still creative. Look, you know, look what we're doing now. Look at us now.
Yeah,
how do you like me now?
Right, we have a bunch of talented people, you know, Edie Van Buren.
With of course.
Spread of her voice, you know, singing with her voice, and Charlie, a great musician. We have Bobby, which is an excellent musician,
right.
Sax player. He plays all types of different instruments, of course. And we definitely are able to capture the sounds of the flamingos and the harp tones and whatever else we do. We just are able to do that, you know? And we present ourselves as a vocal group more than it is like the Brooklyn Bridge, which is a very a different kind of musical ensemble of things. You know, the approach to music is very different. That's why it's refreshing to Freddie and myself to be a member of the Dulcetons, because we're going to our roots.
Right, which is the vocal group.
Group way of looking at it.
Right, no, I agree with you.
But that's the opportunity it gave us, and like you said, we're definitely going to live up to that and continue it and do the best we can, you know, as far as that goes, with the Brooklyn Bridge at Mohegan Sun when we just worked there.
Right.
I mean, the people were like floored, and they said, you know, this is something you must continue doing.
Absolutely.
You got, and the way they encouraged us, and the crowd that was there, you know, we missed Freddie and John, but now even, like you say, even more so, now we really got to do it, you know?
Right.
We
got to. I agree. I want you to come down to Florida, and, you know, I would like to be a part of it. I've spoken to Barry, you know, Barry and I have kicked it around a lot.
I hope so.
And I might get even involved with him and do it with him.
Yeah, we really would be looking forward to that, because we are talking about some sort of a musical review of sorts.
Right.
And I know the economy is really a disaster area. It just gets crazy every day. I mean, look at the market today.
I know.
You don't know where to go, and it's affecting each one of us.
Oh, of course.
In particular.
I know.
They're losing their 401ks, they're losing their homes, they're losing their jobs.
I agree.
These people, you know, the music's in them, but they don't have the money to go out and to enjoy it, you know. And it's a very difficult situation out there, Mike.
And you know what? I think, I still say, and I tell Paulette every night, this is America, and it's going to get better. It will get better. I know it'll get better. It has to get better.
I know. It's just a matter of time. I agree with you. It's just a matter of time.
You know. I mean, and you know, we know the things that have to happen. You know, that's for another discussion. But, you know, it's like certain things have to change. And we have to change, you know, the way we look at things now. You know, we've allowed a lot of things to happen that can't happen anymore. That's the answer.
As musicians and members of bands, and myself personally, the Dulcetons, the Brooklyn Bridge, is to continue, you know, continue the music.
Right.
Keep it up to the level where, you know, we feel we can take it. And like you said, when things do get better, we'll be ready to present the shows the way we were supposed to.
Well, make no mistake about it, Les. You are loved, and all of the guys that you've worked with for all those years are loved very, very much by the fans that have been supporting you all these years. And those people out there will never, ever give up on you, because, you know, you've brought them so much. And even in the face of tragedy, I know that all of those fans will be there to support you. I consider you my good, good friend, and you will always have my support. Always. So I just want you to know that.
I believe that, and I really thank you very much. And
absolutely.
We're looking forward to like we said, get involved with each other's work and go forward together here.
Absolutely, Mike. Absolutely. And
we go back a long time, and hopefully we'll have a long future
Absolutely. I just want to say, you know, rest in peace, Freddie Ferrara, because, you know, you were a sweet, sweet, kind, giving, talented human being. And I'm just sad beyond words. I mean, you know, because I spent time with you recently, and you're just a lovely, lovely man. So let's just keep Freddie in our thoughts. And instead of saying goodbye to you, Les Couchy, I'm just going to say this. I'm going to say, to be continued.
Absolutely. And to add to that, Freddie's spirit and heart will be with me forever, along with, of course, John. And we'll keep their spirit and music alive as long as we can.
I know that. Well, it's been really good talking to you. I know you have so many things to do, and you have, you've just been on a treadmill. So
it was a good workout.
Yeah, no, I know.
All right,
Les, I'll talk to you very soon.
All right, give my regards to all your fans and friends, Mike.
I will. Thanks, Les. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Like I said before, what do I do when I get follow me.
Naturally fly, yeah, I like it. Cry naturally cry, yeah. Oh my darling, my heart naturally beats for you. Stars glow naturally glow, alo, and winds blow naturally glow, alo. Loving you is so easy, loving you is so right, loving you comes natural, like moonlight in the night, cause you're swell, naturally swell, la, and I fell, naturally fell, la, oh my darling, my heart naturally beat for you, loving you is so easy. Loving you is so right, loving you comes natural, like moonlight in the night, cause you're swell, naturally swell, and I fell, naturally fell, la.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and I have with me on the Harmony Street Show Stan Zeska, member of the Del Satins, original member and lead singer of the Del Satins. And, you know, we just spoke to Les about the passing of one of our dear friends and also a member of your musical family and somebody that you've known since you were a kid, Freddie Ferrara. And, you know, it's such a great loss, Stan. And I know it's really, at this point, still tough to talk about it. Must have been a terrible week.
Yes, it was. Freddie was a dear friend. He was like my brother.
No, I know. I mean, you guys met at what age? It must have been way, way back.
I was, I was 15 years old.
Oh, man. It's just a sad, sad thing. No, I actually was with Fred and the Bridge not long ago. Paulette and I went on a cruise. It was actually the first one that they did without Johnny. And even at that point, Freddie was feeling weak and, you know, sitting down during the show a few times just because he didn't have the stamina to stand up. But still basically Freddie, I mean, very sweet, very humble. I mean, my recollection of Freddie every time I saw him was he was just a sweet, sweet man.
Well, you got that right. He was a gentle person, a very gentle man, always found time for everyone.
No, I understand. Now, going way back, a few people know, and we spoke about it a few years ago, but at that time, how did you actually meet Freddie and cement together, you know, what would become the Del Satins?
Well, I was with a group uptown, uptown Manhattan, and we called ourselves the Yorkville Melodies.
Right.
And we'd sing on the street corners, just like almost every group I've ever heard of.
Right.
Same thing, they all sing on the street corner.
Chime off and sing it.
Yeah, and have people throw eggs at you and
right.
Or at the window and yell at you, please get out of my way.
You know? I know.
And one night we met a social worker that worked at this
neighborhood house called Lenox Hill Neighborhood House. And
right.
he said to us, instead of getting water thrown on you all the time and everything, why don't you come down to the neighborhood house and I'll get you a room.
Wow.
You can rehearse in.
Which is a luxury.
Oh, yeah. Especially when the room was empty and it had a nice little reverb sound. You know how that feels.
You bet.
So we did. We went down to Lenox Hill and we went in a room. We did our rehearsing and everything, and everybody left. And as I was leaving, I heard this harmony coming from one of the other rooms.
Which lights you up when you hear that.
Yeah, especially this harmony. I poked my head in and I saw Les Cauchy, Tom Ferrara, and Keith Kessner. Just the three of them. And I introduced myself to them, and they was listening to us and said, wow, we really like the way you sound.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you guys, I've never heard anything like you.
Uh-huh.
And they asked me if I would sing a song with them, and I was a baritone singer. That's a background singer.
Uh-huh.
I didn't sing lead at all. I only knew one lead, one song, all the words, too. And I never even sang it, but they asked me to do it, and ironically, the song was called Sweetest One by Johnny Maestro.
Right.
So it's like, if you know the history of the Brooklyn Bridge and the Del Satins and Johnny Maestro and how it all come together, it was just a crazy thing. That was the...
Right, I mean, it's very coincidental that... it was tied together even before the Brooklyn Bridge stepped out as the Brooklyn Bridge.
Yeah, and it was that song. They asked me would I be interested, because the singer they had wasn't showing up for rehearsals or something.
Yeah, and there's always one.
If I would want to sing with them, and I said, well, I would have to learn all these songs.
Right.
These songs, and that's what I did.
Very cool. And how did... How did Freddie actually find his way into the Satins?
Well, Freddie wasn't with the group. It was just the four of us.
Right.
For a while, and we used to rehearse wherever we could find a place. And
right.
One night we were rehearsing down in the basement of the building that they lived in.
Right.
And those were an old tenement houses where there was a furnace that supplied all of the hot water and the heat for the tenants in the building.
There gotcha.
Like six stories of people living there, and the only way they could get hot water was by someone putting coal in the stove, and that was Fred's job because his mother and father were the superintendents of the building.
Uh-huh.
Came down one night and was putting coal in the stove, and we said to Freddie, hey, why don't you just do this and hit the snow coal? Like, oh, he did, and Freddie came into the group that moment. And throughout the whole transition of the Del Satins to the Brooklyn Bridge to the present day, to the day he passed,
wow,
he's the only one out of all of us that never left the group.
Unbelievable.
Tommy went to Vietnam. Les went to Vietnam.
Right.
Left the group. Richie Green left the group.
Wow.
Richie Green, after Keith left, we replaced him with a... one of the guys I used to sing with the Yorkville Melodies.
Right.
Was Bobby Fiella.
Uh-huh.
And Bobby recorded a couple songs with us, and then he moved on, and we got Richie Green to take his place.
Wow.
But Freddie was the only one that never moved. Mm-hmm. He stayed throughout the whole thing from the very beginning to the very end.
Unbelievable. So if it was baseball, he would have gotten, you know, like gotten an award for playing so many consecutive games. Because
yeah.
he never missed, or, you know, perfect attendance award.
Yeah, what's that baseball player's name?
Yeah, right.
3,000 games straight.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Cal Ripken.
Cal Ripken. That's
yeah, it. There you go, see?
Freddie Ferrara was the Cal Ripken.
The only reason I remember that is because I probably woke up a half an hour earlier than you. Otherwise, my CRS is pretty powerful, you know?
Well, you're lucky you got me. I just woke up 10 minutes ago.
Yeah, there you go. You know. So, okay, so, you know, as far as Freddie was concerned, I mean, really and truly, to have spent that much time with somebody as part of your family, not just your musical family, but, you know, somebody who is part of you. The other thing is, you know, after the death of John, which was hard enough to handle for everybody that was connected to John, you know, fans included, things were really starting to look up in many, many ways. I mean, even you and I talked about, you know, what the future would be. And, you know, the Dulcetans have been out working to really rave reviews and fans really wanting to hear more and more and get their fix. And, you know, so this happening in the midst of all of that is a tremendous blow to everybody involved. There were really no words.
You're right about that. I think we started last time I spoke to you.
Right.
We were just getting it started.
Correct.
And
right.
And we worked every Wednesday. I mean, we worked so hard trying to get everything together. And the first rehearsal that we had, we started singing songs that we hadn't sung in 50 years.
Gotcha.
I was amazed that everyone remembered their parts,
wow,
the lyrics, and it was just like, wow. And it took me a while to get Tommy Ferrara, who's Freddie's brother.
Right.
It took me a while to get him out because he was with the
Caprice, right,
for 30 years.
Right.
He had retired and didn't want anything to do with the business. And I kind of convinced him to, like, gee, it would be nice to get us all together again. Yeah. And wouldn't you like to sing with your brother?
Uh-huh.
And that kind of, like, sold it to him. And when he came to rehearsal, it was like, yeah, man.
Yeah, I remember this. I'm going to rub it all over myself. You know, but that's, you know, really and truly, you knew deep down inside all you had to do was get him there once.
Yeah, that I was hoping that was the case.
Yeah.
And as it worked out, that's what happened.
Well, you know, it's really funny. When I was singing with the Mystics, there was a show at the Broward, and it was the Bridge, Mystics, Skyliners, whatever. And believe it or not, Freddie that night sang with the Caprice when they came out to do their act, and they thought it would be cute to do, and they announced that it was the first time in many, many, many years that Tommy and Freddie had sung together in a group.
Yeah.
And a lot of people took pictures, but that was at the Broward Center in Florida, and everybody was really tickled about that because they said, look at this, it's the Ferrara brothers singing together for the first time in like 30 years. You know.
Yeah, I had my own group called Stan Ziska's Dulcet.
Right, and that I remember.
Brooklyn Bridge were going real strong, and we would do a show, three or four different shows with the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
And Johnny would invite me up to sing with them, and I would invite Les and Fred,
right,
to sing with us. And over the years, Tommy would be on the same bill as the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
And he got up and sang with Johnny and the Bridge.
Very cool.
But never all of us at the same time.
Right.
And this year, it was just, I don't know if it was fate or the way it was supposed to be, but we wound up doing Eisenhower Park for 20,000 people.
Right, which I love Eisenhower Park. I'm a Long Island guy, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
And then we did two nights at Hofstra, which was incredible.
Right.
And someone had taken a video of us, and we had pictures done. And if it wasn't for us getting back together for that short time that we had, Freddie, none of this would have been possible, and we wouldn't have had the memories that we're going to have.
No, I understand. The first thing I said, and you remember, and I said it to Les, and I said it to you, and I said it to anybody who cared, was, oh, my goodness, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to put everybody together in this way. You can do Dion songs, you can do Satin songs, you can do Johnny songs, and they're all part of the mix, and everybody was there for all of it. So this is the way, I guess, to savor and keep all of those groups going at the same time, and legitimately, you know, not just people coming and saying, well, I'm going to do a tribute to this or a tribute to that. I mean, you've had the luxury of being on so many Dion. What's better than that? You know.
Oh, you know, life comes full circle.
And the other thing I have to say to you, Stan, is that your chops are as good as they've ever been, and there's no other choice for a person to stand in front of that group other than you. I mean, and there are many, many people that think that, you know, not just myself trying to fluff you up.
That's very flattering.
So, you know, but absolutely, you know, it's the truth. As a matter of fact, I said to Les, and straight out, I've been talking to Barry, and, you know, I told Barry, I said, let's just go, I'll do it with you. We'll go partners and we'll plan a whole bunch of shows, you know, here and there and everywhere. And Barry said to me, well, I'm probably going to fly up there at one point. Then he said, why don't you come with me? So I see that happening, and that's something that I would really get behind.
That'd be great.
People call me all the time. Says, oh, you want to invest in this show and do this and do that? And I say, Paulette is always grabbing me and saying, hey, in today's day and age, you know, what, you know, why would you want to stick your neck out? It's always getting gray hair, trying to sell tickets and whatever. But, you know, emotionally and just because of the bond that I have since I'm a young guy, you know, with Les and Johnny and that whole thing. I mean, you know, that's something that I would really love to help out with.
Well, I know that Freddie would have wanted us to continue. His wife, Janet.
Right.
It said he couldn't wait for Wednesday nights to come to rehearsal.
Oh, sure.
And she said when he came home after rehearsal, she says, I haven't seen him in all the years that we've been married. I haven't seen him this excited and this happy about anything he's done.
Right.
And you could see it in his face and in Les's face. And Tommy lives in Staten Island. Now, for the people that don't know where Staten Island is,
right,
is compared to Long Island, it's a 2.5 hour ride.
You bet.
Away.
And a couple of bridges.
Yes. And he would pay his own gas and his own tolls just to be there and sing with his brother. And, you know, as a matter of fact, today's Wednesday and we're having a rehearsal tonight. It'll be the first one we're going to have since Freddie passed. But we intend on keeping it together for Freddie's sake. I know that's what he would have wanted. And that's what we're going to do. The Del Satins are still around and will be around.
Well, it's going to be an emotionally charged rehearsal. And, you know, Les either emails me or calls me on a regular basis to tell me what's going on. And, you know, I know he feels exactly the same way. It's funny because I texted Dion as soon as I found out the news, and he texted me back and he said, I didn't know. And then he actually called me the following morning. That was last week. And he said, I'm in New York. He says, I'm having a lot of trouble getting around because there are protesters all over the place and I can't really get around New York. He says, but I want to know, he says, is it the truth about Freddie? Because he said, I want to post it on Facebook, you know, something, a little something about how I feel about it. He said, but I don't want to make fool of myself. And I said, no, I already spoke to Stan and I already spoke to Les and it's true. And he said, thank you. And
well, I saw him post something on Facebook and he mentioned all our names.
Right.
And said, a dear friend of his, Fred Ferraro.
Right.
Bridge and the Del Satins. Was born into eternity.
And right.
Dion always had a way with words.
Oh, you bet.
I thought that was really special.
It's funny, but I never knew this. Les brought out something that said that Dion actually had nicknames for everybody in the Satins.
Yes. Actually, yeah, his nickname for Fred was Durf.
Right.
Which was Fred spelled backwards.
Uh-huh.
What he would do is he would spell everybody's name backwards.
Very cool. I see. I got you.
Spell, and Tommy would be Mott.
Uh-huh.
I would be Nats.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Nats, I think it is, yeah. And Fred's name was Durf, and till this day, he was Durf. Everybody knew him as Durf.
Next time Dion texts me, I'm going to call him Noid.
Yeah, oh, that's what we used to call him.
he'll get a kick out of that.
Yeah, but he would.
Noid, not annoyed, but just Noid. Well,
yeah.
Stan, I won't keep you. You know, I know that really things right now as far as planning and grieving and thinking and feeling are pretty hectic right now, and I just appreciate the time that you've taken out to talk to me. and talk to people that are listening. And good luck. And I'll be there in every way to support you. All you need to do is tap me on the shoulder.
Thank you, Mike. It's my pleasure. And anytime you'd like to talk, it'll be my pleasure to do it.
Okay. I appreciate that, too. And thanks for being a good friend, man.
I will tell everybody tonight that you said hello. And
thank you.
Maybe one day we can get the whole group to do an interview, you know?
There you go. I mean, you know, all we got to do is have everybody together at the same time. And or I think when I fly up, maybe we'll just all do it in the same room.
Yeah, that would be great.
And maybe you can sing a couple of tunes on the air, too.
That'd be
cool. All right, Stan, have a wonderful day, and I'll talk to you very soon.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, man.
See
Bye.
It was early this morning, we heard the news. It's so sad, it's so blue. He wasn't a doctor, wasn't a lawyer. A DJ, he died today. Yes, a DJ passed away. He was only a young boy, like me and you. It's so sad, it's so blue. So draped the jukebox. A DJ passed away. So let the oldies play, let all the goldies play. All the sounds that he played for us, the songs of yesterday. And say a prayer for him, and dedicate a song. Many say he was the greatest cat, he was a DJ, he died today, yes, a DJ passed away, so let the golden sounds fill the air, maybe he will hear that in the great somewhere. He was a DJ, today, yes, a DJ passed away. I can hear the records play. Goodbye, Mr. DJ. Goodbye, Mr. DJ.
Thank you. You know what? I would like to introduce all the members of our group to you folks, okay? Okay, so you know them by their first name. So let's begin by introducing you to the guy who just performed that fantastic guitar solo. He's our lead guitarist, and his name is Jimmy Saul. So say hi, Jimmy. Yeah. Now let's go over to the other side of the stage. All the keyboard work that you've been hearing this evening, along with some vocals, too. And once in a while, if you look closely, he may even give you a smile. On keyboards, Marty D'Amico. Say hi, Marty. Oh, yeah, they love you, too, Marty. Yes, they do. Now, we're going to focus our attention to the rear of the stage, the heartbeat of our group. He has been with us for more than 33 years. He has been with us for more than 33 years. And before that, he was with the original American touring company of Jesus Christ Superstar. So if you will, on drum, let's have a nice round of applause for Lou Agesta. Say hi, Lou. I'm going to move out of the way here to the other side. You know, we are proud to say that we have four original members. And I introduced you to two of them earlier, but I introduced them to you as former Del Santos. But let's do that one more time, only this time as original Brooklyn Bridge members. So if you will, again, let's hear it for Fred Ferrara, one of our original members. Let's hear it for Les Couchy again, another original member. Right in the middle of it all, he has been with us from the very, very beginning on bass guitar and vocals. Let's hear it for Mr. Jim Rosica. Say hi, Jim. He loves it. You know, it's been a long day today, and we'd like to thank the management and everyone involved with this evening's performance for being so nice to us and treating us so well. We want to thank them. And we'd also like to acknowledge our sound crew. Don't know them all by name, but our very own sound engineer is out in the truck right now. Where's the camera? Out there somewhere. His name is Smitty. Smitty and his crew. We have Anthony, and we have front of the house mixing by Rob all the way back there. So a nice round of applause for them, please, and everyone else involved. This song is for you, because we know that without you folks out there, we wouldn't be here. That's right. And we know that, and we appreciate it. So we thank you for it. And also, I want to send this song out to all the men and women who are over in that other place doing their job so that we can do this. And we thank them for that. Yes, we do. And let's get them all back home. Oh, oh, oh.